Okay, good evening, guys. So Thursday night is generally Parsha night, but this is the first night we're learning, and so we're still going to do a little bit more introductory type of things. So I'll connect it to the Parsha. The Parsha is Ki Tetze. It's about going to war, and so what I'd like to do is share with you a little bit about my own personal war, and just an opportunity. I'd like to just tell you a little bit about who I am, what I do, why I do what I do, and, you know, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but numerous times I find myself, not recently, but there were times in my life where I kind of went to the refrigerator, opened up the door, felt really hungry, and the fridge was full with food. And yet, for some reason, not the tuna casserole. Not the meatloaf. Have you ever experienced that, where you open up the fridge, you're really hungry, and there's plenty of food in there, and for some reason, nothing in the fridge speaks to you? Have you ever experienced that? Have you ever walked away, and literally within about 60 seconds, go back to the fridge, open it up, and do the same routine, right? Have you ever done that multiple times, as if an elf in the meantime had put something new in there, right? Well, so what I want you to know is that when you do that, that is a good sign that what you're looking for is not in the fridge, okay? Because what you're looking for is in the freezer, okay? You see, what you're looking for isn't food. What you're looking for is to fill a sense of emptiness, and you haven't figured out what that is. Now, I shared this idea, and a fellow came up to me and he said, you know, Rabbi, I can tell you, because I have had a very long history of drug abuse, and I've been in recovery for 20 years. And I discovered something through Narcotics Anonymous, where they teach that within every soul, there is a hole that only God can fill. And when you don't fill that hole with God, you will try to fill that hole with drugs and alcohol and gambling and compulsive shopping, but nothing will fill that hole. And so when you're feeling that hunger and you're trying to fill it and nothing's filling it, it's because you're looking for your spirituality in your life. So I want to tell you a little bit about my story and kind of my journey. And so you can understand where I'm coming from, who I am. Because I'm not a professor. I'm not here to just tell you ideas or share with you ideas. And I'm certainly not interested, nor will I ever test you on what I share. But really what I share is my own journey and my own struggles and my own discoveries. Because really, you know, I believe that most of us have a defining moment in our lives. And I think if we trace it back, generally there are childhood memories, and very often your earliest childhood memories have had a huge impact on who you are and the path that you've taken. Certainly in my case, that's true. Because one of my earliest memories, which really is the defining moment of my life, and that's why I'm sitting here, and that's why I'm one of the Rosh Hashivas of Araita, head of Israelite, because when I was about, 10 or 11 years old, I don't know what age I was, but in the middle of the night, I woke up to my mother screaming in the middle of her sleep. And my mother was having a nightmare. And I was very shocked and, you know, kind of woke up very startled. And my mother was screaming, and my father quickly jumped out of bed and he calmed her down. And I realized, although there's no way I could ever know for sure, but I was pretty sure that my mother was having a nightmare of the concentration camp. Because I am a son of a survivor. My mother was in the concentration camp. My grandparents were murdered by the Nazis and probably in a gas chamber. We don't know where they died, but most likely in a gas chamber. And my mother, at 15 years old, was in a concentration camp. And my mother was the type of survivor that never spoke about the Holocaust. Never said a word about the Holocaust. We just knew that something very horrible happened. I knew that my uncle was also murdered by the Nazis. And all I knew is that my mother and her two sisters had survived concentration camp. But other than that, I don't know anything. And she never wanted to talk about it. And I never felt that it would be appropriate for me to ask questions because I was afraid, you know, maybe she just doesn't want me to awaken or remind her of any of these memories. But at night, those memories would come to her, and there were times that she would scream in the middle of her night having this nightmare. And so that night, the first time I experienced this and witnessed this, I was lying in bed, and my soul was flooded with questions. Flooded with questions. Is there a God? And if there's a God, is he really good? And if he's good, why is this world so bad? And if we're the chosen people, oh, I wish he chose somebody else. And that was really what I grew up with. I did not grow up in a religious home. I grew up in a very Jewish feeling home because I always felt guilty that I did something wrong, right? So I knew I was Jewish. And other than that, you know, we did go to shul 3 times a year for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We did eat crackers on Pesach. But I wasn't a proud Jew. I was beat up. I went to a school that was, there was only one Jew. I was the Jew. Everybody else was Catholic. I was beat up for killing Jesus. And I told the kids, I tell you, I don't even know the kid. I never played with him. I don't know him, right? But I was beat up for killing Jesus. And so I really wasn't a very happy camper Jew at all. And I just knew that a large group of people wanted to kill us. And I don't know why, right? And I knew that if I was born, you know, a few decades earlier, then maybe I too would have been in a concentration camp. Just because I'm Jewish. And I have to understand, I didn't look Jewish. Maybe now I look Jewish, right? But as a kid, I did not look Jewish. You know, I got this little slippery nose here. I got red hair. I look Irish, you know? When I was a kid, I looked Irish. But I was beat up for being Jewish. And so these questions would haunt me, right, in my childhood. So if I'm a philosopher and if I have written 8 books, it's not because I thought that there were a bunch of people that needed questions answered and I'll go research it and write some books. I didn't write these books for you guys or for anybody else. I wrote them for myself. Because what's in my books are my own journey to find peace with God and find joy in Judaism. And really, my journey I call from the oi to the joy of being Jewish. Because my childhood was an oi of Judaism, right? And so, you know, what do you do when you're filled with questions and you're young and you have nobody to speak to? My father was a Russian immigrant. My mother's from Vilna. I had nobody to talk to. I didn't feel I could talk to my Hebrew school teachers. I hated Hebrew school. Right? Because when I was a young boy, my parents came up to me and told me that because I'm Jewish, although all the other kids after school, you know, at 3 o'clock go home and watch Bugs Bunny and Batman and Superman, I'm one of the chosen people. And I'm going to another school, right, for 3 more hours a day to hear about Aaron and Moses, who did not impress me. They just did not, you know, I mean, from my point of view, Superman would have picked up the people and fly them over the sea. What's this splitting of the sea stuff? It just didn't interest me at all. So Hebrew school did not seem to be a place where I could get my questions answered. And I was terrible in Hebrew school. You know, I was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. In public school, I got A's. Right? In Hebrew school, I got Dalids, right? The teacher would call up my father, you know, Mr. Aaron, you know, we got to do something about your kid. My father, Yiddish man, what? I don't understand. My son is a good boy, but what is it? No, his son was a very bad boy. And, yeah, I remember one time in Hebrew school, there was a substitute teacher, and one of the kids started screaming, "You're so boring! I can't take it! I'm going to kill myself!" And he jumped out the window. Now, the substitute didn't realize that even though we were on the 4th floor, right underneath it was a roof. And the substitute freaked out because this kid jumped out of the window. But the roof was right over here, and he was crouching underneath. That was, you know, but I have to admit that I did get something from Hebrew school. I got this very odd belief in God because I didn't listen at all. And my Rebbe, Rabbi Applebaum, would say, "David, read." And I would just, with perfect faith, put my finger on the page. And you know what? 50% of the time, I actually got it right. And the other 50%, when he yelled at me, said, "Vayomer," I had another chance to find Vayomer, okay? But I didn't think Hebrew school was going to be a place where I could get answers to my questions. And then public school. Also, I didn't feel public school was a place where I could ask these philosophical questions about God and spirituality and meaning in life. You know, I remember when I was a kid, it was grade two, you know, in Canada, and I don't know why, where's the Canadians over here? All right, but you won't remember this, but in Canada, we used to sing every morning in public school, "God Saves the Queen." And then we would recite the Lord's Prayer. One day in grade two, the teacher came into class and said, "Class, a legislation has been passed in government." Now, you're in grade two, you know. You don't know what legislation is. That's an ice cream. What is that, you know? Legislation has been passed in the government, and it's forbidden to bring religious content into the school. So we are no longer going to recite the Lord's Prayer. That was, like, traumatic. Like, we've been doing that since we're in kindergarten. You know, this has been already 3 years, you know. And so she said, "We're not going to be saying the Lord's Prayer anymore, so please rise as we sing 'God Saves the Queen.'" Well, who's he? I don't know. Don't ask me, right? But could he just take care of that queen? I never knew why we were singing God. I didn't know what was wrong with her, why we had to keep singing 'God Saves the Queen.' But one thing I knew is I'm not going to get my questions answered in public school. So what do you do when you have no place to turn to ask those real soul questions about who am I, why am I, why is life really worth living, how can I make my life matter? So what do? Well, I'll tell you what I did. I ran. I ran away from myself, right? I escaped. I didn't want to hear these questions, right? I just didn't want to deal with any of this. So basically, I had two escape valves. One was rock and roll, and it was basically, went to a lot of rock concerts, I was in a rock band, listened to rock and roll music. I had this fabulous stereo system where I had two speakers on both sides of my head, because that was the only way I could fall asleep at night, because when I would lie down, these questions would haunt me, right? And so the only way I could literally go to sleep is hard rock myself to sleep and turn up the music as loud as I could, right? I remember one of my favorite albums, on the front of it, it said, "For best results, play at full blast." And it's true. I got the best results. What were those results? I just didn't want to hear my soul. I just didn't want to hear that inner voice ask those annoying questions. So is there a God? And if there's a God, is he good? And if he's good, why is he so bad? And does life have any meaning at all? And so it was just rock and roll. I went to lots of concerts. Right, I don't know if you'll remember some of these people. One of my favorite artists, I don't know if I could call him an artist, is a guy named Alice Cooper. And it was just crazy. It wasn't even music anymore. Right? Most of the concerts I went to were circuses. It was just loud, loud noise. And it was, "Give me the Beat Boys and Free My Soul. Want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away." So I did that for many, many years, right? But I had another escape valve, and that was comedy, right? And I realized that that would be a great way to run away, because my father, who really loved comedy, would buy these albums. You know what an album is, right? It's kind of bigger than a CD. And my father would buy these albums of these comedians. So there was this one comedian who was a psychologist comedian. And what he would do is he would kind of use comedy as an opportunity to give psychological advice. And my father really liked this guy. He used to have his friends over all the time and play this album for them. Well, I really didn't like this guy. I didn't think he was so funny. But there was one thing I remember he said. And that literally changed my life. He said that it's been clinically proven that as long as you keep laughing, you will not get an ulcer. And I thought, that's a philosophy of life. Just keep laughing. Turn up the music, rock and laugh. Just rock and laugh. And I did that for a good few years of my life. And I decided I would never be serious. Because you know the guys who are never serious are the most serious, right? Yeah. So I would never be serious. I would turn everything into a joke. And I just decided to just keep laughing and laughing and laughing. And I didn't get an ulcer. I got a hernia. But I kept laughing. Well, so those were my two escape valves, right? It's just turn up the music, turn up the laughter, and try and run away from the inner voice that's saying, okay, so who are you anyways? What do you want to do with your life? What is the meaning of all this? Is there any meaning to all of this? And so I share this story because my guess is I've met a good few that were very much like me. Right. And so essentially what happened is, I don't know why, but somebody at my public school said that there's this, there are these classes at a synagogue for teenagers, and that he said, maybe you'd like to go. And I said, well, why would I want to go? He said, well, because, you know, there's really nice-looking girls there. I said, okay, that makes a lot of sense, right? So I really went there because they told me there's a lot of nice-looking girls there. I wasn't interested, and again, I was not looking for answers. I was looking for running away. And I remember I went to this program, and they had these different classes available. And one class was called introspection. And I knew I'd better not go to that one. Right, you know the one that really catches your eye? That's the one you know you don't want to go to because you're so scared. And so I decided to go to something else, but I knew I shouldn't. So I end up going to this class in introspection. And I don't remember a word this guy said, but it really was life-changing because I saw this guy. He has this knitted kippah. He's got this Rolling Stone t-shirt. He's got tzitzit sticking out of his pants. Right? He's funny, he's hip, and he's frum. He loves being Jewish. Made no sense to me. That makes no sense. That you could be hip, cool, and literally love being Jewish. And really committed. And beyond that, although I don't remember what he said, I remember that he had something of content, of substance to say about life, about purpose, about what this is all about. And so I came back the next week, and I came back the next week, and then they told me there's a Shabbaton, and I went to a Shabbaton, and I realized that there are answers to questions. Now, I'm still extremely questioning kind of a guy. Right? I have a beginner's mind where I really don't accept things very easily, and I'm constantly asking beginner questions. But essentially, my journey has been a journey of trying to find the answers to the ultimate questions that determine the ultimate value of our lives. So I decided I'd go to Israel and I would give yeshiva a chance. And my first day, I go down to the Kotel. Now, I have to picture this. You see, at that time, I had this huge red afro. I mean, I didn't have long hair. I had wide hair, right? I mean, in high school, when I walked down the corridor, you got to move out of the way. I had this, and I will not show you this for a little money, but for a lot of money, I'll show you a picture of what I looked like when I was your age. I would not, Rav Binney would never have accepted me into a Raita if I was that, you know? So I go down to the Kotel, and I'm wearing one of those. In those days, they used to give out cardboard kippahs that look like something you put French fries in, okay? So I had this cardboard kippah on my head with this huge red afro, so now I look like I got a shtreimel, you know, with this little thing on my head. And I'm at the Kotel, and this very religious-looking man, he's got a long black beard, long peyos, long black coat. He was very long and black. And he walks up to me, and he says in a broken English, I teach Kabbalah. you want to learn Kabbalah? Now, what did I know about Kabbalah? The only thing I knew about Kabbalah is that it's forbidden to study Kabbalah till you're 40 years old. Well, so here I'm at the Kotel. This man comes up to me. He says, I teach Kabbalah. You want to learn Kabbalah? I know it's forbidden. So what do I say? Yes. This is great. Something Jewish and forbidden, that's a perfect recipe for me. All right. And this rabbi who lives here in the Old City, which I hope to introduce you to, took me under his wings, and I was only 18, and he started teaching me the secrets of the universe. Now, they were really secrets because I didn't understand Hebrew, and the only English he knew was, I teach Kabbalah, you want to learn Kabbalah. And everything else was in Hebrew. But for whatever reason, I felt that if he came up to me, I must be the Messiah. And I better stick with this, but unfortunately that didn't turn out as my career passion. But I stuck with it. And what drew me to these teachings is it's the system behind all of Judaism. It's like the grammatical rules that if you didn't know them, you might understand the meaning of different words. But it's those hidden grammatical rules that are not on the page which enable you to put those words together and make sense out of the whole thing, okay? And very much those teachings are the science behind Judaism. Now, personally, I don't encourage guys to be studying Kabbalah, and I'm not going to be teaching you Kabbalah, although I will teach you some ideas that are drawn from these mystical teachings. And they're not so mystical. In fact, they make a tremendous amount of sense. Okay, tremendous amount of sense. But what drew me to it is I'm a very systematic thinker. That's just the way Hashem created me. And I love to see things. I like to define things. I don't like an idea here, an idea there. And, you know, that's not the kind of Judaism that turns me on personally, right? But I like to see how it all fits together. And you know what, guys? It does. And that's what's so amazing about the fact that I'm sitting here as one of the Rosh Yeshivas of a yeshiva. Because I'm a guy that moved from the oi to the joy. I'm the guy that really never wanted much to do with Judaism. I was angry at God. I hated Hebrew school. I didn't want to go to synagogue, right? And yet, here I am, and I want you to know, I teach Torah not because I think it's true. Now, I do think it's true. But I also think biology is true and chemistry is true. There's a lot of topics and subjects that I believe are true. But I don't teach those topics. I teach Torah because I know it's amazing. I teach Torah because it is giving me a phenomenal life. It's given me a context for a life of meaning, for a life that really matters. Okay? And so, you know, I'm looking forward to having a phenomenal year with you. And as I mentioned before, I do have other responsibilities. But, you know, you guys are really very, very important to me. And any way that I can help you in your journey, personally, any questions, one thing I want you to know, Adoraita, is no questions are out of bounds. Okay? You know, a boy told me from last year, he said, the difference between Adoraita and certain other yeshivas, again, I'm not saying this is all yeshivas, right? But this was his perception. His perception is the difference between Adoraita and other yeshivas is in other yeshivas, if you have a question, then you go up to Rabbi and you tell him, and he says, oh, there's a rabbi in the corner over there you can talk to, right? Whereby here at Adoraita, we preempt that. We have courses in this. We expect these questions. We honor these questions. We encourage these questions. And it's not just there's a rabbi over there that you can talk to, but rather there are courses here all year long that will be addressing these questions in a organized, developmental, rational way, right? So we're happy that you're here. We're not afraid of questions. We'd be more afraid if you didn't have questions because then you're not really thinking. And the quality of your questions will determine the quality of your quest. And so if you want an incredible life quest, then you have to be asking great questions. And Rabbi Nachman of Breslov had a teaching that I know I had a great year before Rosh Hashanah because in my brain, half of my brain is filled with questions and the other half of my brain is filled with answers. And I know that I will have had a great year if the half of my brain that was full of questions is full of answers and the half of my brain that was full of answers will be filled with new questions, right? So I will know that you had a great year if the half of your brain, might be most of your brain, might be all of your brain, that's full of questions will be filled with answers, but you will also leave this yeshiva with new questions, right? Because without questions, life is boring, okay? I still have questions, okay? I'm not going to share those with you right now, but I still have questions. But I certainly don't have questions that this is the best choice I could make in terms of the kind of life that I believe is the best life I could live. And we'll have a whole year to schmooze about that. But it's important for you to understand, we come to you as people, right? We don't come to you as teachers. We don't have an agenda to make you look or think or be like us, because we don't believe in that. We believe in education is about providing an environment and nurturing you in a way that you can find yourself, be yourself, and love your life and enable other people to love their lives too. Okay, so let me hear any questions that you have about what I just shared. Any questions you have about me personally, I'll be happy to share anything that I'd be happy to share, and the things I won't be happy to share, I won't share. Okay? So what would you like to know? Anything about me? Yeah, or anything. Yeah, what's your name again?
Rafi.
Yeah, Rafi.
What kept you interested at the beginning? You kept saying that you were just not feeling Judaism at all.
What got me interested?
What kept you interested? Because you went to...
I started getting answers. I started seeing that I was better. You know, we're all looking for a better version of ourselves, right? When I, you know, you have to stand, and I'll kind of fast forward a little bit. I got to a point where I decided I wanted to wear a kippah. But I was in a high school that was like 90% Jewish. I mean, the Torontonians will know the high school I went to was McKenzie. You know McKenzie High School? Right. I didn't go to Or Chaim. I went to McKenzie High School. And it was about 90% Jewish at the time. We lived in a self-imposed Jewish ghetto. And it was great because we got the non-Jewish holidays, and we got the Jewish holidays, so it was a really fabulous place. We never went to school. So so I decided that, you know, I really want to wear a kippah. But, like, what's going to happen? I'm going to walk in. I was one of the kids with the, again, I had this huge red afro. I was kind of a hip kind of a kid. And now I'm going to walk in with a kippah on my head. Like, you know, you got to be crazy. And I remember I was talking to somebody, and they said, well, you know, if somebody asks you, why are you wearing that kippah? Just say, well, you wear a mezuzah, why you wear a mezuzah? It's just my way of expressing Jewish pride. But I was really afraid that kids would think that I'm becoming a rabbi, and I have no intention of ever being a rabbi, and that kids would ask me a bunch of questions. And what essentially happened was I circled the block maybe 10 times, because I knew that if I put this on, I can't take this off. I'll look like just an idiot if a month later I'm going to take this off. But I decided I put on a kippah, and I walked into school, and I was shocked by the response. It's not at all what I expected, right? I was worried that the Jewish kids would come up to me and start asking me questions about Judaism and Torah and mitzvahs, who knows what. But that's not what happened. What happened is kids started swearing at me. Kids started making really nasty comments. Well, that was the Jewish kids, but there was this like 10% group that were so different. It was the Italians. The Italians in the school, when I walked into school wearing a kippah, they were impressed. They were really impressed. They said, hey, check this guy out. He's a paisano. See, they're not embarrassed. They are totally proud, right? They would walk proudly with this basically almost naked dead man hanging on a cross, bouncing on their hairy chests. Hey, Tony. Hey, Joe. You know, they're totally proud of their what they believe in. And I saw that the Jewish kids were ashamed of who they are. Well, when I saw that the kids got upset with me that I put on a kippah, well, you know what I did? The next day I put on tzitzis. Just to get them even angrier. Right? But, you know, I was a bal tshuva. So my first pair of tzitzis went down to my ankles, right? I had these long tzitzis. I walked into school. Anybody want to rumble? Yeah, man. Look at these, man. And my first pair of tzitzis I stepped on, right, when I was getting something from my locker, and I got up and they ripped. And then I didn't know if I'm allowed to walk, right? Because, you know, I was a crazy bal tshuva. But anyways, I was a ET, not a BT. And so, what kept me in it? Rebellion. No, what kept me in it is I felt more myself than I ever felt before. Now, I know that might be different because that's not your experience. I mean, a lot of you guys went to like day schools and you've got another kind of a challenge, which I didn't have. But I definitely had stuff with Judaism. Definitely had lots of stuff with Judaism. But I didn't go to high school. I didn't experience a Rebbe coming up to me and patting me on the back and saying, hey, how's it going? Where's your tzitzis? Go home. Right? Didn't experience that. So, but I know some guys did and are very angry about that still today. So, okay, you know. But what happened was, what really annoyed my friends is I really wasn't weird. I was really very anchored in who I was. And I really experienced the idea of tshuva, which means to come back to yourself. It's not about being born again. It's just coming back to being you and being proud of who you are and being comfortable with who you are. And so what kept me going is it was right. It felt like me. You know, this is, I felt really that I wasn't losing myself. I felt I was more finding myself. I felt I was feeling more confident in who I am. I felt more clear on what my life was all about because I was getting answers. You see, you know, one of my favorite bands was Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I don't know if you know much of that, if you guys have any class or at all. But I remember one of my favorite songs was You Who Are On The Road Must Have A Code That You Can Live By. And there's not too many lyrics that I remember from all the bands that I was listening, but I remember the first time I heard that song, that went so deep inside me. I said, you know what? I don't have a code. I'm on a road, but I don't have a code to live by. And if I don't have a code to live by, how will I know what's inbounds, outbounds? How can you even win a game if there's no rules? And my life had no rules. So how could you even know? So it's just like, there was just so much there that, just so much wisdom there that was really making sense and enabling me and empowering me to feel more anchored in who I am and, you know, who I potentially can choose to become even more. And that kept me going. Now, I know that maybe some of you might find that maybe a little surprising. But I hope that you will approach this year with an open heart and open mind and just learn as if you never learned before, you know? And just question. And also, you know, one of the mistakes that people make is while they're trying to understand the concept, they're judging it. You can't do two things at the same time, right? So what I encourage people to do is first listen to the classes and first focus on just understanding what the Rebbe said without judging it or without asking, well, what happens if it makes sense? What will be the implications of my life? Forget about that. Right now, just focus on understanding what he said, and then that night, you can start judging it. You can come back the next day and, you know, ask all the questions you want. But I find that very often the reason why people can't grow is because they have preconditions on what ideas they're ready to accept. And when they hear something new, their mind closes down because they're scared, where is this going to take me? You know? And it's lech lecha. Life is lech lecha. Hashem says, Avinu, come to a land that I will show you. Avram doesn't say, well, you know, show me now. Where's the picture? Like, where are we going? Now, if you want to take a true journey of growth, then it's got to be an unconditional journey that I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm going to take this journey with courage. And I will ask questions, but I also be open to hear before I ask the questions. But I find that sometimes people are so stuck in their way of thinking, they don't even hear what the rabbi says. You know, they're so busy trying to determine whether they're going to like this idea, whether this idea is going to impact them in a way that they don't want to be impacted. They're so afraid maybe this might inspire change. They don't even know what they're hearing. So forget about change right now. Right now, just open your hearts and your minds to learn, to understand. And then think about it later on and come back with your questions. But you can't do two things at once. You can't judge and understand at the same time. First, without judgment, listen, think, ask questions that relate to helping clarify, understanding the point, and then you've got the evening, you've got the week, you've got a year, you've got your life, to then judge whether you accept the point. And one thing I want you to know, and I believe this is true about everybody that teaches here, we don't expect you to accept anything we say, right? Right? You don't have to believe, you don't have to agree, right? That's okay. When people say to me, well, according to your argument, I'm not arguing. I don't argue, because I'm always right. But besides that, I don't argue. I'm just sharing, I'm dialoguing, we can agree to disagree. This is your life. You got to make choices that you can live with, right? And that's all I want to do is just want to help you find you, be more happy with you, because that's what Torah is about. Torah is not about Torah. Torah is about life. If you've come to write to the study Torah, you're in the wrong place. We don't study Torah here. We immerse ourselves in the tree of life. Torah is about life. And that's what I'm interested in talking about. Life and how to make it better and even better and even better. And our guide is Torah, and I've experienced it to actually be a phenomenal guide to living a phenomenal life. Any other questions? Yeah.
When you first started realizing that Judaism is actually a lifestyle that you wanted to live by, did you stop yourself and ever say, wait, what am I doing? This is not how I grew up. This is not me. This is something that's ludicrous. This is something that is too far to reach for. And just kind of question yourself.
Look, you know, it's healthy to have doubts. It's normal to have doubts. And when you have doubts, you know, you go to talk to somebody about it and hear their perspective on it. Sometimes we're so inside our, you know, our experience that we can't step outside and look at it more objectively and see it. There are friends that made this journey with me that are no longer religious. I'm really thrilled that I stuck with it. But hey, you know, it's normal to have questions. I would say the best answer I ever got on the Holocaust, because the Holocaust has been something that deeply, deeply disturbed me. And so in Toronto, there was a rabbi, a Lubavitch rabbi, who every Shabbat afternoon had an open home that anybody could come to his home and sit and learn or chat or ask him any questions. So my friends and I decided that we would go to this rabbi and ask him our questions. And of course, what was my question? Where was God in the Holocaust? Right? And I remember I asked Rabbi Glukowski, said, so Rabbi, where was God in the Holocaust? I remember Rabbi Glukowski's eyes went wide, and he just put his head down, and I saw this shift in energy, and he looked really, really sad. And he just went back and forth, and he looked at me and said, do you think I can answer the Holocaust? Do you think the Holocaust doesn't challenge my faith every day? I don't know. That's when I was able to move forward, right? Because I was able to see that you can still be committed and still be challenged, right? And this rabbi was so honest, and he said, I don't know. I am challenged by the Holocaust. I don't have answers. I don't know where God was in the Holocaust. But the fact that I don't know, you know, like courage means you're afraid and you still do it. And faith means you do have some doubts, but you still believe. And you still move forward. Okay? So, doubts are normal. And doubts are actually healthy. They're part of how to grow and make things deeper. There are things that I doubted, and through that process of dealing with it. The truth is, when I was about to get my smicha, I didn't believe anymore. I lost my faith in Torah, and that was really a problem. I'm in a yeshiva, I'm one of the top guys, I'm getting smicha, and I don't even know if I believe in this anymore. And so I had to take another journey, and I had to go talk to some more rabbis, and I came out of that even stronger. So it's normal. It's healthy. It's part of being human, right? So But you see, I believe that Judaism isn't a conclusion but a choice, a responsible choice, and that my job is to amass enough evidence to make a responsible choice, but to not make a conclusion, right? This is not math. This will not be 2 plus 2 equals 4. Whether I believe that Torah is the prophetic word of Hashem or not, I can find evidence that is compelling enough to make a choice, but not compelling enough to say, well, without a shadow of a doubt. And I'll explain why it's actually meant to be that way. There always has to be a shadow of a doubt, because when you lose that, you will lose free choice. Right? And a big, I would say, the centerpiece of Jewish life is choice. And if I had no doubts at all, then I'd be a computer. Yeah. So doubts are part of being human, and it's actually a healthy part of what fuels our growth. So it's okay. Other questions or comments or thoughts? So I understand that the time has come for the Chillin' Challenge. Yeah. Yes.